Room Pod, part of the White Dragon Podcast Network. Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'll be your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers.
Hi, groomers. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to episode 10 of the Groom Pod. If you're looking for the show notes, head over to thegroompod.com, where you will find our blog, which has all the show notes on it, also our advertiser banners. If you'd like to be part of the discussion, join our Facebook group. Just search The Groom Pod, and I will put you through. And we've got a lot of action on the Facebook group this week. That's pretty exciting. Also, if you're looking for Barbara, you can go to groomblog.blogspot.com or shop.bieber.biz. And our emails are barbara@thegroompod.com and Susie, S-U-S-Y, @thegroompod.com. I'd also like to mention that you can now search us on iTunes and also Stitcher. And it really does help if you guys rate and review the show. If you happen to use iTunes, go over there and give us a rating. And I want to do a big, gigantic, huge welcome to all of the new people. Did you see all the new people that came on this week?
Oh, yeah. We're just rocking them out. That's great.
There's a bunch of them that are international as well, so hello to all you international listeners. We're just so happy to have you guys along, and thanks for participating in the Facebook discussion this week. That's great. One more thank you, a little bit more housekeeping. Thank you to Kevin Kessler of the WDPN and Two Men and the Mouse for all of the help you've given us, and I'd like to congratulate you on your one-year anniversary with Two Men and the Mouse and also the WDPN network. So if you guys are interested in pop culture or Disneyland or just want to look for something different, head over to the WDPN link on our podcast website, and you can listen to some of the other shows. So, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been an interesting and a little bit strange of a week.
Oh, yeah? I had a little bit of an incident yesterday with the dog with the long quicks on his nails. Yeah, I had him up in the hammock, and he was flailing around and pulling against me like he always does, and then he all of a sudden stopped. Just stopped cold, and I pulled him down out of the hammock, and he was panting and he was staring straight ahead. It was either the precursor to a stroke or a heart attack, or it was a seizure. And he has seizures in his doggy family, so I immediately I unhooked him from the hammock and I held him for a few minutes, and he started to calm down, and then I took him right inside and just didn't go any farther with the grooming. And then apparently last night he bit his brother dog, so they're taking him into the vet this morning just to make sure nothing is going on, because sometimes those behavior changes, they can indicate something more serious, and he's got crappy background. So that was a little more excitement than I was looking for yesterday.
It's always scary when a dog is suddenly unresponsive on your watch.
Yeah, it was bad. It really shook me up. I was lucky I only had one more dog to do afterwards, but I'm very glad that they're going to take him into the vet and have him looked at. That's the right thing to do at this point. I didn't know he had bit. He bit the owner as well a week and a half ago. So there's some behavior changes that are happening in him that are pretty extreme, and I really care about this little guy. So hopefully Toffee will get better.
So wait a minute. We're not done yet. Did you charge for the grooming?
They paid me for the grooming. I was going to charge for the nail trim because that's all I got done. Mm-hmm. And then come back next week. But it's a little dog, and since he's going to the vet, they are going to wash him at home. So I charged for the nail trim and the other dog in the family, and then she paid me for the whole thing. So, you know, okay. I only spent about 10 minutes with him before I pulled him down. So,
yes, you know, but you did the right thing by the little dog, and you did make the trip.
Yes, and if they hadn't have had the other dog there that I had already done the full groom on, then I probably would have considered charging them for the whole groom, but because all I did was the nail trim on the second dog and it's just a Chihuahua, I was pretty okay with just the nail trim charge.
Okay, I'm ready to go on.
Okay, let's go on then. Let's go to the show schedule. And I know next week is Pasadena. And I know everybody's getting all ramped up for Pasadena, and I'm a little bit jealous that I'm not going down there. But,
me too.
Yeah.
A lot of my Arizona grooming friends are going to be there, and some of my new Arizona friends. And I would have had so much fun there, but oh well.
Yep, a lot of Washington people are going down because it's an easy flight down there on Alaska Airlines, so... I've got a bunch of friends that are going down, and I recognize that it's just not going to happen. But you know what? Maybe, just maybe, you and I can meet on Sunday during creative and watch.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, for you guys out there who are listening, Barbara and I met on text. And we were both watching the creative competition on tablets and stuff, and we discussed it all, and it was really fun. So let's make a date to do that.
Okay, I'll do that with you.
Okay, so Pasadena, February 19th through February 22nd. Atlanta Pet Fair is March 5th through March 8th. All American Pet Expo in Columbus, Ohio is April 17th through April 19th. Our Northwest Grooming Show in Tacoma, Washington is April 23rd through April 26th. The Pet Boarding and Daycare Expo, Burbank, California is May 4th through May 7th. Every month, the Wisconsin Association of Professional Pet Stylists, that is such a tongue twister, has their monthly gathering. And I want to mention, I was poking around on petgroomer.com yesterday, and I noticed that the Wisconsin Association of Professional Pet Stylists has a link up there on their front page. So if you're looking for that seminar or that gathering, go ahead to petgroomer.com and you can find it on there. And Olga's stuff, the VIP Pet Expo in Alexandria, Virginia, that's Show and Asian Styles, that's April 27th and 28th. The National Dog Groomers Association Workshop and Certification at Groomers Mall Store in Virginia is April 12th and 13th. And Olga's webinar, taking place on March 24th at 8 p.m. If you're not registered for that, I'm not sure if you can get in, but you can certainly try by looking her up online. So there we go. That's the show schedule. A lot of stuff going on.
Boy, it's the industry is full of events. That's a big change, and all these pet expos that are happening now that are including competition grooming and grooming seminars and everything, that's a big development. We need to look into that a little bit and explain to our listeners what that development of the pet expos is. I'm curious about that. Are you?
Yeah, very curious. I think it's such an exciting thing to be able to go and see products and talk to people. And I noticed Todd Shelley this week he's BarclayProductions.com. He was asking online, how important is the networking that takes place at these seminars and shows? And pretty much everybody who posted that it's like the most important thing, rubbing elbows with fellow groomers and talking about stuff. I can't speak highly enough about it. You know what else I like to do? I really like to go to the shows and do a little shopping. But sometimes when I can't get to the shows and do my shopping, I think, well, heck, I'm going to go to B-Bird's site and do a little shopping there. Because you've certainly got a great selection of stuff. I can't get enough of it. Is there a minimum order for your shop?
No, that's one of my features. And one way in which I differ from some of the usual sources of pet supplies for groomers is that I don't have a minimum order. So you can just come in and buy one or two things and pay the shipping. I mean, I don't care. If you want to buy a $6 bottle of ear powder and pay $7.50 for shipping, hey, I'm okay with that. I don't advise it. And it always kind of makes me say, what? But there isn't a minimum in the B-Bird shopping cart. And what I have there is not a complete supply. I'm not Groomers Mall. I'm certainly not Amazon.com, as you will find out from my customer service. But it's a very personalized shopping cart of items which I have actually used and find value. And the other thing that can happen is that you can call me on my 800 line, which is 888-278-0279, and I'll be happy to consult with you about your shopping choices, as long as you end up buying something from me. You know, well, Susie, I remember spending 2 hours with a lady that had two cockers that wanted to groom, and we talked about tools and products and all kinds of questions that she had. And you know what? She ended up not buying a thing from me. And that's when I felt ripped off.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
So I love to talk products and tools and help groomers make selections, but I would hope that you would end up at least buying one of those things from me.
I love your saying, shop from a groomer, it's good karma. I really do believe that it is good karma.
It's supporting me.
Let's
you know, it's supporting the groomer who happens to be me. And it helps me stay in the industry and keep helping you.
Yep.
So when you line my pockets, you give me time to write and talk to you on the phone and be a part of things without necessarily having to wrestle with another golden doodle.
I love that concept. That is exactly why we're doing this podcast. I'm extracting all of your knowledge.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Speaking about extracting knowledge, let's talk a little bit about brush burn. Since last week we talked so much about dematting, one of the consequences of dematting can be brush burn. Just to be clear, what we're talking about here is that angry red patch of skin that happens when you've used a little bit too much pressure or you've overbrushed in a certain area and you've irritated the skin. And it really does kind of happen to all of us. You've had it happen occasionally, haven't you?
Oh, I've had it happen, not so much recently when I've become sensitive and more knowledgeable about how that happens. But in the beginning, it happened to me every now and then. It tends to happen with slicker brushes more than pin brushes. It can happen with the Furminator tool. That was my last one that I remember brush burning, was somebody with a Furminator tool. But my bather occasionally, because we do brush out a lot of Bichons, and Westies are another, you know, white coated dogs tend to have more sensitive skin.
And sure
yeah, so white, you know, and that's the last one where you want a red splotch.
Yep. So I've noticed that commonly it happens at the, you know, when they grow that third ear behind the ear, that big mat that's behind the ear, trying to get that thing out of there, or sometimes on the knees or underneath the armpits. These are all spots where we work on tangles because they tangle so often, even on the tails and the ear leather, you can cause some brush burn areas. So when you see it happening, when you kind of notice that you got a little bit of a red spot there, what do you do?
I break out the Gold Bond powder.
Yeah, me too. That stuff is magical.
And I talked to one of my vet friends about my use of Gold Bond powder because, you know, it's a little off-label thing. And it saved my butt so many times. I mean, not that I've created a lot of brush burn, but clipper abrasion, doing poodle feet, and just here and there where redness and stuff appears. But that Gold Bond powder has just like saved the dog from a vet visit is what it amounts to. Because if you can knock down the inflammation right from the get-go, it's not so likely to go downhill into a worse situation, or the dog won't lick it or scratch it or annoy it because you've taken away the irritation.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes when you've brush burned a dog, the dog may not actually react on the spot, but then later when the dog goes home, it becomes very itchy or very painful. And if you've trimmed that dog's nails and then they go home and they start itching at that area, they can create some really horrible damage from that.
So it really helps to nip it in the bud. You know, a calendula ointment or a calendula gel actually can sometimes do that, but you know, I really haven't found a natural solution that gives as good first aid as my good old Gold Bond, which the vet agreed was an excellent choice. My veterinarian supports me in the use of Gold Bond. So what I do, I think I've mentioned this before, at Target, they have travel size Gold Bonds that you can buy for a buck, for a dollar. And I usually get about five of them and have them on hand at the shop. And then if I do a brush burn or a clipper abrasion or the feet come out red or anything like that, I can give that to the customer. And if the customer goes home with a solution to the problem that you created, it's not going to create ill will as it would if the dog goes home and makes a worse problem for you. Oh, and another thing, you know, another thing that happens when you nick the anus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're trying to clean up around the little butthole so that the little hairs don't catch the poop and make Klingon, and the dog sits on your trimmer.
Yep.
Sits on your blade. You've got the right angle going, you're being delicate and all of that, and the damn dog sits on the blade, and the next thing you know, it's got a little nick there.
And that thing's going to itch later. You can be sure of that.
And they love it when their butthole itches. I mean, I'm telling you, dogs love to work that. And they'll just go into major drama over a little itchy anus. So there again, a little Gold Bond on it and confess to the owner. Had a minor grooming accident today. Send them home with some Gold Bond. You know, so little abrasions and little nicks happen in many different ways. Brush burn is one of them, and little clipper accidents are another common source.
Well, I love that idea of carrying around those travel-size Gold Bonds, and they pretty much have them at the drugstores or any of the shops that sell travel-size goods. That is really a great idea. As a matter of fact, I think I'll stop and pick up a few of those extra. I carry one in my drawer, but that sounds great. So there are also some industry-specific topical stuff that you can get. Equus has that Microtech spray. Mm-hmm. I've had some good results with that. Chris Christensen has the Peace and Kindness spray. Davis has a hydrocortisone spray or a Promoxin spray. And Nature Specialty has an anti-itch that who knows what's in that. And it's called Wham. So there's some industry-related products that come out. Now, prevention is really your best bet. And I know with today's tools, it's a lot easier not to brush burn a dog, especially the Flexi Head, the Mars Flexi Brush,
which you can find at the Bee Bird shopping cart. Those little Mars Flexi King brushes are hard to find, and we got them.
That's good to know. Mine is looking a little tattered. I should probably pick another one of those up. So those help, and learning to brush properly helps. Using a light touch, not dragging the slicker down across the skin. And always be aware, always be looking for that irritation. And one last tip I'd like to throw in there is file the nails so that if there is a little bit of irritation and you haven't caught it, by the time the dog gets home, he's not scratching himself into a staph infection. Anything you want to add on that?
No, but speaking of scratching, I got scratched up really bad this week. And I would show you my hand. Well, maybe I can post it on our discussion page. And this was a Silky Terrier, and all I was doing was trying to hold its head while I trimmed around the eyes, and that dog pawed at me so ferociously that he broke the skin and made a bloody mess of the back of my hand.
Darn it.
Yeah. Darn it. You know, like, so I don't know how. We might raise a question to you on the discussion page. How do you handle it when dogs want to use their paws to keep you from doing your work?
I have the new secret weapon. It might not work as well for you, though, because it's a little hot down there, but I throw my coat on, so I protect myself.
Oh, so you protect yourself. Yeah, I know. Well, and this is what the owner of the Silky Terrier is. Well, I guess you need to wear gloves.
Yep.
But, you know, gloves are hard, but what I have and what I'm going to do in the future is to use my bite sleeves, my cat grooming bite sleeves, Because that leaves your fingers to be able to grip things well and to use your scissors even.
Do they cover your hands?
They cover up to the fingers. Just your fingers just stick through. So they cover the back of your hand, and then and maybe even partway up the fingers, so that the knuckles and the fingers come through. And I use mine. I use those frequently when grooming cats.
Those look neat. I wonder if they have those on Amazon. You don't carry those, do you?
No, I don't carry those. They're not cheap. You know, and I think are they called Bite Knot? We might want to look into that a little bit, Susie, and give people more information.
Maybe I'll put that up on the blog page. I'll try to search it out and post it up on the show notes, which is on the front page of the Groomazon. Did I just say that? On the front page of the groompod.com website. And also on the front page of the groompod.com website are our advertising sponsors. And if you are doing any shopping at all on Amazon, and I do mean any shopping, it doesn't matter what it is, if you're buying a MP3, if you're looking at a movie, if you're doing a little pet shopping, or even if you're buying yourself something special, if you just scroll down to the bottom of the page on our website, that's thegroompod.com, you'll see the Amazon banner. And anything that you buy, when you click through our website, the show gets a tiny, teeny, itsy bitsy little bit of a taste off of that. And it's not a big amount, but if we get enough of that, it can help support the show. So it doesn't add anything to your cost on the show, on the product. So if the shirt costs $6, it's still going to cost $6, but then they throw a teeny, tiny little bit towards the Groom Pod, which we really, really, really appreciate. So we'd love it if you would go to Amazon through our website and clear your cookies and bookmark it, and that way anytime you do any shopping down there, you'll be supporting the Groom Pod and supporting Barbara and I. We've got a new segment coming this week. It's called the Definition du Jour. And Barbara, what is our Definition du Jour this week?
Well, this week we're going to talk about sunflower triglycerides.
Sunflower triglycerides. Boy, that sounds, it sounds floral.
Sounds floral, and it sounds a little chemistry, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So here's the thing about triglycerides. Triglycerides are the main component of natural vegetable oils and animal fats. So most seed oils, like olive oil or sunflower oil, are around 95% triglycerides. Now, so the chemical definition, or chemically, triglycerides are esters formed by glycerol and three fatty acid groups. So that sounds like chemistry, right?
That is definitely chemistry, and it's multi-syllabic, words with a lot of syllables.
It's with a lot of syllables. And the reason that I made sure that I included that chemical definition of triglycerides is to remind us that nature is chemistry. So we want to kind of get over it about chemicals and about chemistry when we realize that even natural substances all have their own chemical sounding components. So each natural oil or fat has its own fatty acid profile or combination of the three fatty acid groups. That's where they get the tri in triglycerides, three, right? So what?
So does this stuff absorb into the hair?
No, it coats the surface of the hair, and it coats the surface of the skin. And the other thing that it does is that it coats the fragrance component, the fragrance oils. So sunflower triglycerides act as a natural fragrance extender.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because most fragrance extenders, things that make your fragrances last a long time, are chemicals, synthetic chemicals such as phthalates, which are somewhat controversial. And sunflower triglycerides encapsulate the fragrance oil and delay the evaporation of the fragrance thereby allowing it to last longer. So these that's a real important property and function of triglycerides in shampoos and conditioners. And they also serve as an emollient for softening the skin and deterring water loss from the skin.
So we're going to find this in both conditioners and in shampoos?
Yes, you actually find it more often in conditioners, but the company that uses sunflower triglycerides, a lot of companies use, so the term triglyceride is often kind of interchangeable with the term lipid or oils. So, you know, there's really, I have not found that sunflower triglycerides are actually extracted from sunflower oil, but what I find is that some suppliers use the term triglycerides rather as a reference to the oil itself. So the other thing about sunflower triglycerides is that they serve to soften and smooth and the skin, so they kind of make up for it, they kind of act as counter irritants for the action of the surfactants in the shampoo, and they also act as a light conditioner for the hair. So you would find them either in shampoos or conditioners, probably more often in conditioners, except for Show Season Shampoo uses sunflower triglycerides in nearly all of their shampoos.
So if the shampoo has a harsher surfactant, then they would throw this in the ingredient pile to maybe make it a little more gentler on the skin?
Well, if it has almost any good cleaning detergent, it would serve in that way. It's one of the sunflower triglycerides are used in Show Season Grime Time, which is a serious degreasing product.
I love Grime Time.
I love Grime Time. And here's the thing about Grime Time. It's almost all sodium lauryl sulfate, which is very harsh, but is a very good degreaser. And what else is in Grime Time is sunflower triglycerides. So the sunflower triglycerides is what makes this particular Show Season degreaser not as hard on your hands as some of the other products that are available to do that same job.
That's a great degreaser. It comes in a little tub, and you can just rub it straight from the tub right onto the dog, and it just does a great job.
So it's really good to use on ears and on, we use it on dirty feet a lot.
Yeah. I bet you never see it in the form that I see it, which is a solid lump of lard.
You mean
it's probably always liquid for you.
Well, that's because sodium lauryl sulfate becomes solid at cooler temperatures, which is you, and remains in a liquid form in warmer temperatures, which is me. Here's something about sunflower triglycerides. They help prevent freezing of the products. So triglycerides help keep the product from changing form when it gets cold.
Yeah, that's handy up here. Although, I must say, it's pretty warm today. It's going to be 60 degrees. I think we've had a little bit of a global switch up here.
Yeah, we're in the 70s and 80s down here. It's almost too warm for this time of year. You know, it's like some of us are scared about what's going to come this summer if it's in the 80s already in February.
We have no snowpack up here. They're skiing on almost nothing in our mountains, and that's a little unnerving as well.
Yeah, that has an economic impact. So anyway, I've got this business about sunflower triglycerides written out. I did my homework. And so we will put on the website, on the discussion site, we'll put a link to the Dropbox page. And I will also, we'll put up on the show notes, and I'll publish it on the pg.com, petgroomer.com, on my blog there called The Bird Talk. We'll put it on there.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's hop over to do a little clipper maintenance now. This happens to be one of my extreme pet peeves, and I know everybody uses different brands of clippers out there. I'd say probably the majority of people are using the Andis clippers these days, or perhaps the new wall clippers, or what are you using these days?
I use Laube iClip and an Andis, the purple one. I'm so technical. You know, the purple one with a good grip on it, with a rubber on the sides. And I'm having problems with both of those. I have to change the blade drive an awful lot. And I'm kind of usually behind in doing that, so I get poor clipper action going and get frustrated and grumpy. And the Andis, this is for the third time I have a blade stuck on the clipper that I can't get off, and the spring of the and wires are poking out and the bottom where you would push the button.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Your hinges come apart.
My hinges come apart for the third time on this clipper. And that's really pissing me off.
Okay, so here's the clue. First and foremost, you're supposed to change your drives every 30 days. Andis recommends every 30 days.
Who does that?
I do. I absolutely do. And I'll tell you why. I'm using those Excel clippers, and they are so fast that they beat the crap up out of that blade drive. And 2 weeks afterwards, and there's already slop. And if your sharpener adjusts your blades a little bit too tight, then they're really working that stupid plastic clipper drive like crazy. So I am a proponent. I buy them by the dozen, and I change them whenever my clippers don't clip anymore. And they're cheap. They're like $4 or $6 or something.
But you know what? This isn't you. Whenever I open up a clipper and do something, it doesn't go back quite the same.
I need to come down there and give you a lesson.
I just get scared. I get scared, Susie. I just don't trust myself. But this last time with the Andis, the blade guy, he serviced this Andis, and you know, I don't use that clipper a lot. I just put it back into service, and I just got maybe 3 weeks, and then that stupid hinge thing is happening again.
So I'm going to guess that your hinges were already somewhat coming apart before he installed them. So I change my hinges every 3 months, or when I can fit my fingernail underneath the hinge. So if I'm looking at the clipper and I cram my fingernail underneath that hinge and I can move it at all, I've got to change the hinge on that. Because once again, with those Excels, they're spinning that blade so quickly that it just pulls everything apart. So the hinges on the Excels are really easy, because you don't even have to take the clipper apart to do them. You just unscrew the Excel hinge and put a new one. But on those purple clippers that you have, you actually have to take half of the clipper body off. And once you do that, then it's hard to, can be a little tricky to seat the cord back in there. But what I'll tell you about Andis clippers is that every single part of that clipper, with the exception of if the motor goes, is replaceable by you. You don't need to have somebody else do it. It's a matter of screws and attaching wires for a cord, or removing the drive and putting in a new drive that's just two screws. And Andis makes a little pop-out thing on their newer clippers, so you don't even have to take the body off anymore. You just pop the lid off, and then you take the screws out and you switch that drive out, because they know just how fast their clippers are and just how much they beat up that drive. So
yeah, and you know what? That's all you have to do on the lobby. Pop the little partial faceplate off.
The biggest difference, though, is the Laube lever is a much stronger piece of plastic. So they say you don't have to change it for 2 to 8 months, you know, if you're working it really hard, 2 months. But the average person doesn't have to change that but once a year, really. Whereas the Andis drive is a flimsy little piece of plastic that really does need to be changed regularly, or your clippers just aren't going to function. You're going to think they're broken. And my friend Sharon is a classic for this one. She won't change her own drive, so she just sits there with a bad drive and wonders why her clippers don't work well.
And blames her blades. Some groomers, they blame their blades and their sharpener because it's not working right. And really the source of the problem is the drive shaft.
Another problem that the Andis Excels are having is with the cords, because they have a load resistor box on the plug-in end of the cord, mm-hmm. and it's heavy. And then there's a lot of cords. So if you're a cord twister, your cord's going to go bad a lot quicker. But
I have one of those monkeys.
Oh, that's cool.
The monkey cords are kind of cool, except that it will pull the hair off your arm. And you know what? When that happens, it almost feels like you've had a shock. You can't quite tell what happened, but it hurt. You know?
Yeah, well, I'm not a twister because I've got a clipper back hose attached to my clipper most of the time. So I don't have that issue. But remember not to grab your clippers by the cord and pick them up. And I have a tendency to grab it by the hose and pick them up, but occasionally I'll grab the cord. So last month, I think Groomer to Groomer had an article about how to change out or how to prevent this from happening to your Andis cord by putting a cable tie around the handle. And doggone it, if that very week I read that article, both of my cords went bad on my Excels. But, you know, I took the clipper body off, and I took the screws out, and I rehitched the new wire in there, and I reseated the cord, and it was done in about 3 minutes. The hardest part was getting to the store to buy the cord from the grooming supply guy.
So, you're a mechanic. Susie the mechanic.
I do have that aspect to me, yes, but really, this stuff is so simple. And I always carry a battery-powered screwdriver, so I'm not twisting my wrist and trying to get the screws that we've got in there to back out. I just use an electric power screwdriver, and it makes it less daunting, although you can go right through the housing because it is just plastic when you're screwing that screw back in, so be cautious with that.
I have a, what is it called? I have a kind that you can keep turning it. It is
a ratchet screwdriver?
I have a ratchet screwdriver, thank you.
I have one of those too.
I have a ratchet screwdriver and it's a Craftsman, and it has these interchangeable
bits,
and they're all stored in the handle of the screwdriver, so you're not gonna lose them. It was such a good buy at Ace Hardware.
I've got one of those too. I have a really little one, and it makes it easy to get the drive screws out, because the drive screws are pretty small. The mm-hmm. clipper body screws are pretty normal Phillips head screwdriver, but the drive screws, they're a little bit tinier. And if you strip them out a little bit, they'll back out. So I also keep a couple of extra drive screws around just so that I don't find myself in a situation, and then another pair of clippers in the car. You know, I'm like Costco. I've got a backup for everything. So maybe a few of you guys out there are still using Oster clippers. I don't know that there's a lot of you, but if you are, you guys need to grease your motor when it starts squealing. The rest of us, we have either brushless motors or brushed motors, and the brushes come out real easy of the Andis clippers as well. And so for the Oster clippers, you have to remove the nameplate. You unscrew the top part where the nameplate is. And then underneath there, you have to remove a plastic lever, a metal link, and a gear. And you have to put some grease in the hole that's underneath where the gear was. But they tell you, don't overfill it. But I'm not so sure that there's a whole lot of people using those Oster clippers out there. What do you think?
I think that they're dinosaurs and not so many people. But you know what? Crystal Dunn, my groomer that's renting from me, she has an Oster lithium cordless, so it's a really new kind of an Oster clipper, and I like that clipper better than I thought. In fact, I borrow it from her when I haven't changed my blade drive, and she gave me permission, and I like it. She loves it, and I like it better than I thought, and I think that might be an exception, but I groomed with Osters. They were the only choice when I started to groom. And
right.
They got so hot, and they blew hair on me. And I used to have to have leather sleeves that they made that you laced up for the clipper.
I remember that.
Yeah, remember those?
Yeah.
And, you know, I still have some of those. in a box somewhere. In fact, I have some of the original, like A2 with the removable heads. I have some of those. If any sharpener out there is a collector, contact me. I'll ship you the darn box.
Try to keep them blown out. Make sure you're not accumulating a bunch of gunk under there either. That doesn't help. If your screws happen to back out, a little bit of fingernail polish on them will hold them tight, but you can still break them loose. And I think that's about all on the clipper thing. So now we're going to hear from our WDPN sponsor, and then we're going to come back with our At the Table segment, which is cat grooming.
Hey everyone, it's your good pal Kev from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks, this will be brief. I know what you're all thinking, you're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the worlds established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. We're at the table, and we're going to talk about cat grooming. I do a fair amount of cats. Do you do a fair amount of cats?
Yeah, I have my share of cats.
Yeah, I really enjoy cat grooming. It's good money. I love cats, but I know that it takes a little bit of forethought to get everything ready when you're going to have cat clients come in. Is your shop ready for that? You know, do you have noisy dogs in there that might startle the kitty? Can you get extra help in so you've got an extra hand? Do you have all your stuff laid out? You know, do you have, I'll tell you a funny story. In my grooming trailer, I have a hand feed table, and it's one of the older hydraulic tables, and it has a storage shelf underneath it. It's got two levels. One level has the divider in it, the other level goes straight through. One time I was getting ready to do this cat who, quite frankly, does not enjoy his bath time. It's a short-haired cat, but his people like him to have a bath, so we suffer through. And I had him up on the table, and I didn't have a figure eight harness on him at all. I was just holding him with my hand, and I let him go for 2 seconds. He hopped down. My table is fixed to the floor, got between the table and the wall, and got into that partitioned off storage shelf. I was panicked. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to drive all day till this cat decides to come out of back there because I can't move my table away. And I could barely, after freaking out for 5 minutes, I finally reached up and just scruffed him and kind of pulled him out, and it was horrible. But you want to make sure you've got everything kind of blocked off so that the cats don't get into somewhere while you're working on him. When the client comes in with the cat, I always make sure to ask if the cat's been groomed before. I think that's really important to find out. So if, as long as the cat's been groomed before, at least then you know that they have somewhat of an awareness as to what's going to go on. The second most important thing, I think, is to just kind of put your clients' expectations into proper perspective. And part of that includes just what you can do with a cat and sometimes what you can't do with a cat. And I find that when kitty time is over, then grooming is over. You only got so much time you can work with a cat. How does your conversation with the clients go when they come in with a cat?
Well, my conversation starts well before they come in with the cat, because I only book. I'm very differential when it comes to booking cat grooming. I kind of interrogate them pretty thoroughly on the phone when they call to ask, and I ask about how the cat is about being handled, if the cat's been groomed before. If the cat hasn't been groomed before, I ask them, how does the cat act at the vet's? Because that's another indication of, you know, if I get any sense that we might be into serious trouble, I just decline. I'm sorry. You know, like I really only do good cats. And I have gloves and equipment in case the cat gets a little bit feisty or objects to something. But basically, I have to be able to know that we're not in a real dangerous situation. So I interrogate them pretty thoroughly before they make the appointment. It's interesting because I have a shop, and not only are there usually some dogs in there, I tend to book my cats either first thing in the morning or last thing in the afternoon so that I will minimize how many other guests are there. And I would control, I wouldn't have a cat in there while Yoshi the Screamer is, right. You know, is there. And, you know, I do not try, this is me, I don't try to eliminate all sights or sounds of dogs. Because I found that a little bit of canine presence, a little bit, tends to allow the cat to just go into a freeze reaction rather than a flight reaction. And that's exactly the reaction that you want. You either want them to be mellow, or if they're nervous and a little stressed, you want them to just freeze. And then you can work with them.
Yeah, sometimes if you lift them up by the scruff, that'll cause a freeze as well. And I think definitely outside stimulus, distraction, I think that sometimes can be a really good thing. In the grooming trailer, I don't get that option. It's just one at a time, so I've just got me and the cat.
Well, I might have one of my Bichons might be, you know, like on the floor 3 feet away from the table, so the cat's going to be less likely, he's going to look around and look at the floor and say, no, I won't jump there. You can tell when they're casing the joint to see what their exit route is.
You sure can.
You can tell when they're doing that. And when I have a dog on the floor, and I usually have one or two of my own dogs in the shop, they're less likely to choose that as an option. And another thing that I do that I include in my equipment for cat grooming is I keep a towel within reach so that if the cat starts going south bad, the cat starts getting uncontrollable, I can grab the towel and cover the cat with the towel.
Yep, I also lay everything out that I'm going to need before I ever start on the cat, including
towels. Absolutely. Everything you do not want to have to turn away from the cat and get. And here is a case where having your tools on the table is definitely allowed, because you want to be able to be as efficient and quick. You know, how do I groom cats? Quickly.
Yes.
You know, because like you say, Susie, they've got an internal a timer going, and you don't know what they've set that for. It could be 10 minutes, it could be 30, but you have to work always as though time is almost up.
So do you bathe every cat?
No, I bathe few cats.
I bathe some, don't bathe others. I kind of just play it by ear, and I always, once again, try to manage the client's expectation with that. What do you do if you're not going to bathe the cat?
I dry clean. I will use I use Equus Rehydrating Cat Spray a lot to just, because I clip most of the cats that I groom are clip downs. So you're clipping off 3/4 of the hair anyway, and then if there's and then I use the Equus Rehydrating Spray for the tail and the boots and the head, and maybe a little bit on the body to calm down any flakes or sometimes when you clip a cat, they've got flaky skin. And I also sell that product so that the customer kind of, and the customer sees that I'm using it, and then they go home with some. And that helps them keep static electricity out of the cat's coat, helps them do a little bit of brushing and combing themselves, hopefully.
Yep, I'll use a dry shampoo also. I'll use, sometimes I use that Show Seasons face wash, and I'll use that to spot clean. Yep, that works pretty well. Yeah. Chris Christensen also has a, you know, a dry shampoo that works okay, although I think that one leaves them a little bit greasier than I like. So do you do combed, you know, haircuts with snap-on combs?
Not often, but I do include that as an option. Most often, and it's probably because I'm in a warm climate, so it's kind of an all or nothing thing. They either want a full coated cat that we're combing out, or they want their cat shaved down. And I mean, I have people I've been shaving down. My cat customers are my most loyal customers.
For sure.
They just don't try to go somewhere else. I have people that I've just been grooming their cats for years, and then when that cat dies, they get another one and bring it to me. So my cat customers are very loyal, and most of them are like 2 to 4 times a year clip downs.
Yep, I've got a bunch of those also, but then I've got a few of these like Himalayan mixes or Persian mixes where people just want the hair a little bit shorter. But I try to keep it realistic, and you know, sometimes comb cuts are not the most even looking cuts on the cat, because you can kind of only do so much. So I will do them, but I'll try to once again manage those client expectations so they don't expect the same thing as having their cat completely clipped down, because that's a lovely smooth grow out, whereas sometimes the comb clipper cats don't grow out quite as nicely. They're a little bit choppy for the first week or so. I always offer them a lion tail or a full tail.
Right.
Yep. And I offer big heads, you know, full manes, or right down to a fairly tight head. Those are some of the options I give. I know.
Right. Me too.
Yep. That's kind of standard stuff. The cats that I do bathe, I'll give an attempt at drying them with the HV dryer hooked up to the stand with no cone nozzle on it, and try to dry them while I'm brushing them a little bit that way, or rub them in it. Of course, I towel dry them first, but often I will just put them in a crate and then put either a cage dryer or a fan or my HV dryer aimed in there without the focusing nozzle on them to get them dry. But I'll let the clients know that I may not be able to get your cat all the way dry in the grooming trailer. So that's one of those things that I don't have that passive drying option very well.
Yeah, I love my passive drying option, and I have a kind of medium small crate, and I have small 9-inch fans on both sides of the crate, and then a regular size box fan at the rear of the crate, and then I can put any number of things up in the front, and I can get 4-way passive air flowing through that crate, and put them on a towel or a potty pad and soak it up from the bottom, and we can get those cats pretty dry in the cage. And then I can just and I have an arm dryer too. I have a stand dryer, so that's a great option for cats that are too afraid of a because even though I have a cool dry where I can turn the air pressure down to practically nothing. Some cats just really don't like forced air or drying. Other cats are oblivious.
Yep.
You can't make any assumptions, because some cats you can just like, just roll them over and be fluff drying and going out to town, and they just like, they might even like it.
Yeah, some of them do seem to like it. I think they appreciate the warm air. So I always cut the nails first. Do you cut the nails first?
I don't cut the nails first. Well, see, we're different. I
yep.
don't, because I don't do dog nails first either, because handling feet is sometimes very confrontational for the animal. And for the cat, sometimes when I do the nails first, it's all over right then. okay, screw you, lady. I'm not, you know. So I kind of like try to do a little something before I do. I try to establish some kind of trusting relationship before I go for the feet.
I try to sneak the nails as best I can. If I can get them off, since I have no help in the trailer, it's just me and the cat, I really would like the weapons to be a little shorter. So I take them off first for my own safety. And I know that occasionally people will wrap the nails with vet wrap. I've never tried that, but I imagine it works all right.
I've tried that, but they can just like toss those booties off. Quicker than a lightning flash. But you know what I do, Susie, that very few groomers do, but it's really been successful for me, is that I have all my cat clients stay and help with their cat.
Oh, that's a great idea. Actually, I do that sometimes as well.
I've found that cats are much less likely to freak out if their trusted person is there with them, and that cats cannot necessarily differentiate between what I'm doing and what the owner is doing. And really all the owner has to do is sit on the other side of the table from me, cat facing them. I'm working from behind the cat where he can't see me, and they're just soothing the cat, and then they can help extend limbs so that I'm not clipping into folded skin. So their job is to keep the cat calm and to help with clipping the armpits and turning the cat on the side and, just a little bit of handling. And I usually train them in the first session.
You bring up a good point, is you don't want to clip skin that's not tight. And certainly the owners can help you get that skin tight if they're standing right there, whereas I don't always have that option.
I know, you're using your elbow and kind of holding the cat down and,
exactly.
and trying with your forearm to straighten the leg so that you can get that armpit safely. And, you know, I just sweat bullets when I'm grooming cats all by myself, because a clipper accident, it's so easy on cats.
Their skin is so thin.
And then if they're old, it's like parchment.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I've got the Kung Fu grip on the scruff, and then I take the front leg and I flip it over with my thumb, and I hold the cat against the back of my arm, and then I lift it up in the air. And it is, yeah, it's a little bit tough.
Yeah, you know what? See, my way is way more easy on the cat, really.
Because I agree.
Because it's just, you wouldn't believe how easy it can be. They're just so much more likely to cooperate if the person is there. Unlike dogs, the total opposite of dogs are more likely to act up if their owner is there and they're not going to accept you as an authority. Cats are just like much less likely to go over the edge. Plus, one more point. Plus, when the owner is there and you get in trouble, they're right there to call it quits right along with you. You know, I can say, I think, good enough for today? You bet, lady.
Yeah, that is a big advantage to actually have them in there and have them watch their cat flip out. Then they usually the tip's better that way, too.
Yeah, right.
So, do you do a sanitary clip on every cat?
Yes. I do try to do that on every cat. And I usually use, you know, for clipping the body and everything, I use my clipper back in an 8.5 blade. For clipping the sanitary up under the tail and the genital area, I use a 5-in-1 trimmer on a 15 setting.
That's a good tip right there. Absolutely. Do you ever shell the belly of the cat out if they're really matted under there, but the back of the cat is okay?
Yes, sure. I do that.
Yeah, we do a lot of that out here. People don't want the whole cat shaved down because it's cold, but you just kind of take the belly off. That works pretty well. Do you do pad hair?
Do I do what? Pads?
Yeah, pads.
If the owner asks me to.
Right, I kind of leave that one up to whether the cat will let me do them or not, and whether it's an indoor cat and it's in the kitty litter box, and you know whether they want that off of there or not.
Right.
Same with rounding the feet up. If I can round the feet up safely, I'll round them up. But I'm not going to risk going down there if the cat's already a little pissy.
Well, and you see, I really partner with my cat owner. I love this model of doing cats with a cat owner. I just can't conceive of doing it any other way, because we just go through all of this step by step, making up our mind, you know, how much do you want to leave on the tail, you know, and they're in charge of remembering all these details.
Right.
Do we usually do this? Yes, we do. Or no. You know, and so we just create each groom together.
What are your favorite tools?
For cat grooming?
For cat grooming.
I would say my IVAC and an 8.5 blade are my favorite tools. And I like wider-faced combs on thick, like Himalayan cats and Persians. I like a wider-faced comb rather than a fine comb. You would think fine hair, fine comb. But sometimes you can get, one of my favorite tools is the Chris Christensen extra coarse to fine comb. And that extra coarse side is widely spaced, but not real super fat tines. And you can, it just goes through thick cat hair very well. And then you can use the fine side for little finer stuff like around the face or something.
My favorite tool for dematting a short-haired cat that doesn't clean itself anymore and has those big, they're not really fully mats, they pull out without much struggle, is the V-rake. And it's a little wooden-handled, small-size rake with two rows of teeth in the shape of a V. And I find that particular rake to be so handy to get those little mats out of there without stressing the cat out at all. Do you ever use that one?
I don't have that tool. I use the original mat breaker.
This gives you a lot of leverage all the way across with the two rows of teeth. It works really well. It's one of my favorite tools for all times. Another thing I think is really helpful is if you're by yourself is a figure eight harness, mm-hmm. so that I can attach the cat up to the lip system so I don't lose him behind the table again, specifically Carrot, that cat.
Yeah, after that was a learning experience. Yeah, I usually use no restraints on my cats.
Well, you have restraints. You've got the owner right there for restraints.
I've got the owner right there. And I've got Yvonne, my assistant, in the background. And I've got my two dogs. But when I do bathe them in the tub, I don't harness them up. I feel that less is best in terms of restraining all animals, but especially cats. I mean, I just don't get rough with my cats at all. I apply the very least force, and I am not bossy with cats. I more or less beg permission, and I'm very grateful for everything they let me do. And I mean, I don't boss them around. Like I can get pretty firm with dogs. You stand there and you be still. But I would, but I would never say that to a cat. I'm more or less apologetic and very contrite. And I just apologize for the inconvenience. And can I please clip your tummy now? You know. And when I bathe them, I use a grate in the bottom of the tub so that they're not standing in the water, and
right.
I let them put their front legs up on the side of the tub, and And if anything, I'll just have a grooming loop available to stick under the front legs.
I don't use any restraint in the tub, but what I do is I use a grate at an angle, and I have the cat hang on to the grate as it's angled up a little bit. So you can reach under with the bathing system and you can get their belly. They're hanging on to the grate, so you can circle their whole body without any problem. Oh, I just realized I pulled the microphone away. So they're hanging on to the grate and you can get around their whole body and still keep your hand on them so that they're safe. There's no harness on them at all, but because they don't want to fall down, they've got a pretty much a good grip on that, on the grate while it's leaned up against the wall. So I do them that way. I use very room temperature water. I don't use warm water on them. They seem to be a little sensitive to that. I always use products that say they are cat safe on them, just to make sure, because I know there's some differences there, right?
I'm not so sure that there are. See, I think this cat safe is a pretty much a marketing tool. Because people don't know what's safe and what isn't, but I don't think that there's really that much of a difference.
Towel dry them, pop them in the crate, maybe put a little perfume on their bottom and a bandana around them if they tolerate it, and if not, I don't bother with that, and I send them on their way.
Well, you know what is a good, speaking of their bottom, if we're dry cleaning and they're a little smelly in the back end, I use Chris Christensen Miracle Air.
Oh.
And it's an odor neutralizing, all natural product. And I, instead of spraying it on the cat or on, I use this also when dogs express their anal glands on the table after the bath. Instead of spraying it on the animal and then hoping that it's going to do the job, I spray it on a washcloth or a piece of paper towel pretty generously and then wipe the area down with that.
That is a great suggestion. All right, well, let's see what our friends around the world have to say about their cat grooming experiences. So I posted on Facebook, on our website, on our Facebook discussion site, give me your top two tips or techniques for cat grooming. And Michaela Snyder, yay, I didn't butcher her name this week, says, for lion cuts, I use a 10 in reverse to make it smooth. I try to schedule them on not so busy days. For cats that are not declawed, I try to scratch, I use vet wrap on their paws. Janet Hoffman-Berg says, after clipping the nails, I wrap the paws in vet wrap, no scratches. So there's two votes for vet wrap. Brenda Mendez says, a second pair of hands and no dogs allowed. Our very good friend Brandy says, run, ha, 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 ha. Little secret about Brandy, she has had as many as 13 cats, so she's a crazy cat lady, and she's telling me to run.
Well, some groomers are afraid to groom cats, and I don't blame them. You know, every time I have one, I get anxious. I mean, I say a prayer, no kidding. I love grooming cats, but on the other hand, it can get really scary.
Yeah, Brandy started out exclusively grooming cats. Her whole entire business was cats, and then she bought herself a poodle, and that was the end of that. All right, so Anna Ray says, do as much as possible before bathing. Cats get testy after bathing. Crystal Dunn says a 15 blade for a nice smooth cut. That's pretty short.
That's too short for me.
Yeah. I guess if your clients are used to it, that's probably fine, though. Nicole Henderson says, never cut the nails first. It makes most cats upset quicker. I save the nails for after the clip or brushing and before the bath. Or if they are really bad for nails, after the bath, wrapped in a towel. This changed the percentage of cats that are bad during the groom tremendously. Even though I remember learning this at Groom Expo and shaking my head like that'll never happen, laughing out loud. And Misty Keller Schwartz says, rescue remedy. And I gotta say, lots of action on that Facebook group. I can't thank you guys enough for being part of the show. And I think that's going to wrap it up for this week on the Groom Pod. Anything you'd like to add, Barbara?
No, I think this has been a great show, but you know what? It's been a longer one. I hope everybody's okay with that.
Me too. Well, all right. Thanks for coming, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of The Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.